all against all. In practice, in Hobbes too, if one reads him closely, this is really a war of some against some, and one or another of the sides generally has state support, or is, simply, the state. Sometimes the aim of the struggle is political supremacy within a given territory, but often the aim is exclusive possession of what is said to be the ancestral homeland, and then ethnic cleansing or massacre, or more likely a combination of the two, is likely to become state policy. At that point, a challenge is posed to the rest of the world. How much human suffering are we prepared to watch before we intervene? The challenge is simply powerful given the new communication technologies. In most cases, now the watching is literal, and it is accompanied by listening, as we listened, for example, to the weeping voices of the survivors of the Srebrenica massacre and to so many other sad and frightening accounts of murdered or disappeared parents, children, and friends. It is easy to agree that ethnic cleansing and mass murder ought to be stopped, but not easy at all to figure out how this might be done. Who should intervene? With what authority? Using what kind and degree of force? These are hard questions, and they are now the central questions of war and morality. In Chapter 6, listeners will find a defense of unilateral intervention when crimes are being committed that shock the moral conscience of mankind. I argue any state that can stop them should stop them, or at the very least has the right to do so. This is an argument from within the existing society of states, and I would still make it today. Its application is perhaps most obvious in cases in which small states intervene locally, as when Vietnam went into Cambodia to close down the killing fields, or Tanzania went into Uganda to overthrow the regime of Idi Amin. The interventions of great powers with global interests are more likely to arouse suspicions about ulterior motives. But small states have ulterior motives too. There is no such thing as a pure will in political life. Intervention cannot be made to depend upon the moral purity of its agents. In recent years, there have almost certainly been more justified unilateral interventions than unjustified ones. But there have also been a lot of unjustified refusals to intervene. Perhaps unjustified is not quite the right word. In places like Tibet or Chechnya or East Timor after the Indonesian annexation, plausible prudential reasons can be given for the refusals. They are morally disturbing nonetheless. The general problem is that intervention, even when it is justified, even when it is necessary to prevent terrible crimes, even when it poses no threat to regional or global stability, is an imperfect duty, a duty that doesn't belong to any particular agent. Somebody ought to intervene, but no specific state in the society of states is morally bound to do so. And in many of these cases, no one does. People are indeed capable of watching and listening and doing nothing. The massacres go on, and every country that is able to stop them decides that it has more urgent tasks and conflicting priorities. The likely costs of intervention are too high. It is more this neglect of intervention than any excessive resort to it that leads people to look for a better, more reliable form of agency. I want to stress that even a long history of neglect doesn't undercut the rightness of intervening in a given case. It is not as if, having failed to rescue the people of Tibet, East Timor, and the southern Sudan, we should also have failed to rescue the Kosovars for the sake of moral consistency. That argument is commonly made in slightly different language, but it seems to me obviously wrong. Still, we should worry about the many failures to intervene and look for agents who might act more consistently than individual states or local alliances of states have so far managed to do. Because humanitarian intervention involves a violation of state sovereignty, it is natural to look for agents who possess or plausibly lay claim to some kind of trans-state authority, which means to international organizations like the United Nations or the World Court. I can imagine a globally recruited army of volunteers with its own officers' corps taking orders from, say, the UN Security Council. During the next several decades, experimental